Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Come on, Tolstoy. Come on. Give us something, some entertainment. Entertain us, please. We're talking about part 6, chapter 30. What is the outcome? Election. You know I've lost interest in the book when the discussion prompt doesn't even make sense. What is the outcome election? What is the significance of it? What's the most touched to the quick you've ever been? Tolstoy is always talking about people being touched to the quick, which is a weird thing to say. What's the most touched to the quick you've ever been? Swim, said the mama fishy, said, my translation has Oblonsky saying something with his smoothest and most almondy smile. What the heck is almondy? The internet gave me no clue. Yeah, mine had that as well. Almondy. No idea. Charlotte and no one else answered, so it remains a mystery. If you couldn't find it on the internet, I don't feel like I'll be able to. Charlotte said, this chapter reminded me what I like about Levin. There's something charming to me about a person so earnest about his opinions that he can't help but give a full and honest answer when asked. He was specifically trying to say something polite to Vronsky to make up for being rude, but that wasn't enough to overcome the impulse to answer honestly. Thermos of Beer said, I'm kind of hoping this election stuff will play into the story, but right now it seems like filler. I was genuinely hoping for Levin and Vronsky interaction, but this was such a brief one that it left me unsatisfied. I was hoping, towards the end of the chapter, when Levin left the crowd, that the two would meet up again, but alas, it didn't happen. I guess this was and is a lot of hoping on my part. I even thought it would be funny if Vronsky was announced for an office and Levin called out decline, but nope. I Am Norwegian says, good luck with the weight loss, Ander. With counting and honesty, it's not that terrible. Counting for me is the key. On days where if I start the day off by tracking whatever I have in the morning, even if it's just a cup of instant coffee, you know, a good 30 calories or 50 or whatever's in that. But if I start the day by doing it, then I'll tend to do it for the rest of the day and I'll try to keep under my prescribed limit. And then there's days where I just approximate it, and then I end up kind of going way over. Today was one of those days, but also because I worked in the winery today, so there's a lot of nibbling at the various foods in the kitchen. And then I went to a mate's place for a social writing group, so we had a bit to eat then. And it's just one of those days when you're going here, there, and everywhere, and you just kind of nibble throughout the day. So I think I went a bit over today, but not over how I used to go over. The thing is, once I get into the habit of not going crazy over it, when I do, it's not like a massive blowout. It's just like a normal day as opposed to a diet day. But it's not like I gained a lot of weight today day. If that makes sense. The iced coffee I used to drink was a little sweetened, usually with vanilla sauce. So good. The calories came from the fact that I could drink a liter of milk in a day like that, plus the vanilla sauce. I weigh the same as you, actually, though I'm 6'1". Yeah, so you got a few inches on me. It was fun seeing my twin brother for Christmas, who used to poke fun at me for being chubby when we were younger. It feels great fitting into old clothes, looking and feeling good in new ones. You should look forward to it. I do look forward to it. I do. Yeah. I've got a whole wardrobe of clothes just waiting to be worn again. So that's going to be bloody awesome. Thanks for the encouragement. I Am Norwegian. Means a lot. I do appreciate it. I Am Norwegian also said, Levin is my kind of guy. His thoughts and boredom, being surrounded by the humdrum of party politics, mirrors my own. I was at one point interested in political philosophy because there you're at least dealing with ideas. But I became disillusioned, both because you'll achieve nothing if your politics are even slightly heterodox, and because the fields involved are so deep and broad that saying things should be organized like this is hubris. how I could sit there fully aware of the economist consensus that had developed over a couple of hundred of years and think they are wrong and I'm right, I have no idea. Luckily, I stumbled onto Jung and Dosto, and politics started to appear more and more superfluous to the important questions. And a stupid dad bot, automatic bot thing, made a really bad comment. Hi, right? I have no idea. I'm dad. I don't even know what that means. bad bot. Sorry, I'm just extremely confused by what that bot is trying to say. Wow. Political philosophy. Oh my god. Just saying that made me yawn. Just saying the words. Just saying the title of that field of study. Oh dear. Philosophy, I could study. But as interesting as it is, it just doesn't seem that relevant. Is that blasphemy to say that? It just seems like, I don't feel like I'm going to progress the field any further. And I don't feel like me wrapping my head around it to a greater degree than whatever I already have is going to make me a better person to the world. So I just don't feel like studying it for me would add any like net good to the world. That's how I feel. Because I love philosophy. But whenever I do indulge in it, it does feel like I'm indulging in it rather than actually doing something worthwhile. But that's my own thing. That's my own feeling, and I am very glad that other people study it. What am I talking about? Let's continue. Let's just keep reading. I don't know what I'm saying. It's Australia Day, by the way. Happy Australia Day, everyone. Send money. Our country's on fire. Today we worked in the wine. I worked in a winery, and the proceeds from the wine bottle sold there went to the bushfires. I think it was a wildlife place. And they raised $3,000 from selling bottles of wine, so that's pretty good. I'm not taking any credit for that because I really had nothing to do with it. I just happened to work there, but, our country's on fire. Chapter 31 goes like this. The newly elected marshal of the province and many of the victorious new party dined that evening at Vronsky's. Vronsky had come to the elections because he felt dull in the country. In order to proclaim to Anna his right to freedom to repay Sviatsky by supporting him at those elections, for all the trouble he had taken from Vronsky and the Zemstvo elections, and most of all to perform strictly all the duties of the position he had taken up as a nobleman and landowner. But he had not at all expected that the election business would interest him so much and so touch him to the quick, yes, or that he could do it so well. He was quite a new man in this circle of noble landowners, but he evidently was a success, and he was not mistaken in thinking that he had already gained influence among them. Wakey, wakey. This influence was promoted by his wealth, by his title, by the splendid house in the town which had been lent him by his old acquaintance, Shirkov, a financier who had founded a flourishing bank in Kashin, by the excellent chef whom he had brought from his estate by his friendship with the governor, who had been a former comrade and one whom Vronsky had even protected, but above all by his simple behaviour in treating everyone alike, which had quickly induced most of the noblemen to change their opinion as to his supposed pride. He himself felt that, except that crazy fellow married to Kitty Sherbatsky, who a propos de boat, quite irrelevantly, had with rabid virulence told him a lot of pointless nonsense. Every nobleman whose acquaintance he had made had become his partisan. He saw clearly, and others acknowledged, that he had contributed very much to Nevovtsky's success. Now at his own table, celebrating Nevovtsky's election, Vronsky experienced a pleasant feeling of triumph. The elections themselves interested him so much that he began to think that he would, that if he were married, by the next triennial election, he would himself put up, just as when a jockey had won a prize, he had wished to ride a race himself. They were now celebrating the jockey's victory. Vronsky sat at the head of the table. On his right was the young governor, a general of the emperor's suite. For everybody else, the general was the master of the province, who had solemnly opened the sessions and made a speech. And as Vronsky saw, aroused both respect and servility in many present, but for Vronsky he was Maslov Katka, the nickname he had had in the Corps de Pages. Who felt embarrassed in his presence, and whom Vronsky tried to mettre à son aise, put at his ease. On Vronsky's left sat Nevedovsky, with his useful, dogged, and venomous look. Toward him Vronsky was simple and courteous. Sviatsky bore his failure cheerfully. It was not even a failure for him. As he himself said to Nevedovsky, champagne glass in hand, no better representative of the new course which the nobility ought to follow could have been found, and therefore all that was honest, as he remarked, was on the side of today's success and triumphed in it. Oblonsky, too, was pleased that he had spent his time merrily and that everyone was satisfied. At the excellent dinner, the episodes of the elections were discussed. Sviatsky comically mimicked the old marshal's tearful speech, and turning to Nevedovsky, remarked that His Excellency would have to adopt a different and more complex method of auditing the funds than tears. Another witty nobleman narrated how footmen with knee breeches and stockings had been imported to wait at the ball which the marshal of the province had intended to give, and that they would now have to be sent back unless the new marshal would give a ball with stockinged footmen. During the dinner, they continually spoke of Nevedovsky as our provincial marshal and addressed him as Your Excellency. This was uttered with the same pleasure with which a newly married woman is addressed as Madam and called by her husband's name. Nevedovsky pretended not merely to be indifferent to, but to despise this title, but it was evident that he felt happy and exercised self-control to avoid betraying a delight ill-suited to the new liberal circle in which they found themselves. During the dinner, several telegrams were sent to persons interested in the elections. Oblonsky, who was feeling very jolly, sent one to Dolly, which ran as follows: Nevedovsky elected by majority of 20. Congratulations, tells news. He dictated it aloud, saying, I must cheer them up. But Dolly, on receiving the telegram, only sighed over the ruble it had cost and understood that it had been sent toward the end of the dinner. She knew that Stiva had a weakness at the end of a dinner party, Faire jouer le telegraphe, to set the telegraph going. Everything, including the splendid dinner and the wines, which did not come from Russian merchants, but were imported, ready bottled from abroad, was very distinguished, simple, and gay. The company of 20 men had been selected by Sviatsky from adherents of the new movement from liberals, men who were also witty and respectable. Healths were drunk, also half in jest, to the new provincial marshal, to the governor, to the bank director, and to our amiable host. Vronsky was satisfied. He had not at all expected to find such a pleasant tone in the provinces. When dinner was over, things became still merrier. The governor asked Vronsky to accompany him to a concert in aid of a brotherhood, which was being arranged by his wife, who wished to make Vronsky's acquaintance. There will be a ball afterwards, and you will see our society beauty. Really, she is quite remarkable. Not in my line, answered Vronsky, who was fond of that English expression, but he smiled and promised to come. When he had already quitted the table, and had all begun, when they had already quitted the table and all begun smoking, Vronsky's valet came up to him with a letter on a salver. From Vozdvizhensk, by express messenger, he said, with a significant glance. It is extraordinary how much he resembles the public prosecutor Svedzitsky, remarked one of the guests in French, of the valet, while Vronsky, frowning, read his letter. The letter was from Anna. Even before he read it, he knew its contents. Expecting the elections to end in 5 days, he had promised to return on Friday. It was now Saturday, and he knew that the letter contained reproaches for his not having returned punctually. The letter he had sent off the evening before had probably not reached yet. The contents of the letter were just what he expected, but its form was unexpected and particularly unpleasant to him. Anna is very ill. The doctor says it may be inflammation. I lose my head when alone. The Princess Barbara is not a help, but a hindrance. I expect you the day before yesterday, and I am now sending to find out where you are and what the matter is. I wished to come myself, but changed my mind, knowing that you would not like it. Give me some reply, that I may know what to do. Baby was ill, and she wished to come herself. Their child ill, and this hostile tone, the innocent mirth of the elections, and this dismal, burdensome love to which he must return, struck Vronsky by their contrast. But he had to go, and he took the first train that night for his home. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Vronsky was having too much fun at the election, and is needed at home by his wife and his sick baby. Have your say about this chapter over on the Hemingway List subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.